and I'm delighted to introduce to Monday and Tuesday listeners to the front page, but a regular on the former Thursday show that I did, Sue Barrett. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Rob. Good morning to your listeners.
Good to have you back. When we last spoke, you had just taken on an interesting role of campaign director for one of the many voices of candidates that will be participating in the next federal election. And certainly, since we last spoke, there's been a hell of a focus on those from both sides of the party, lots of interesting commentary coming as to the validity of the independence around these particular candidates. And at the moment, you're experiencing something which is quite unique in politics that, well, it used to be, but it's not the first time it's happened. Fencegate has reappeared. Tell us about Fencegate.
It's a term I coined around all of the signs, our Zoe Daniel signs, that are being put up around the electorate of Goldstein. And so we're getting a lot of support. People are really keen and want to know more about Zoe. And one of the ways they can demonstrate their support is to put up a Corflute sign on their fence. So that's been going really strongly. We're getting lots of support for that. And across all sorts of electorates, this is actually happening. Even though the federal election campaign hasn't been officially announced, it's kind of already started, as we all know. So we've been happily putting up signs, and Goldstein, our electorate, has two councils. One is Bayside City Council, and the other is Glen Iris City Council. And we have the tale of two councils happening. What's happened last week is that the current incumbent for Goldstein, the current Liberal member for Goldstein, Tim Wilson, started to tweet and send out information that us putting signs up was illegal, that we would get fines, and that he was encouraging neighbours to dob in those people or residents who had Zoe Daniel signs on their fence. Okay? And he was lobbying the Bayside City Council to make it illegal. The challenge with a lot of the stuff that was actually up was very ambiguous, and so what precipitated last week was actually a own goal to the current incumbent, when people basically went, what? You're telling us we can't, you know, demonstrate and talk about our own democratic voice, our own democratic right. We saw a six-fold increase in donations coming into our campaign, people requesting more signs, and basically it took off and made the mainstream press about basically precluding us from presenting and being able to talk about, you know, who we would like to vote for. Mind you, over in Kooyong, in Josh Frydenberg's electorate, you can't walk down any street without bumping into signs everywhere. So it's caused a real ruckus, but as I said, it's really raised the profile of Zoe, and it's got people really incensed that they're being stopped from actually being able to, you know, talk about and present Zoe from a fence sign perspective, hence why I've called it Fencegate. But there's been other twists and turns. So the Bayside City Council said, oh, no, you can put up your signs. And then late last week they said, no, you can't. We've had a few slips. And so currently it's lawyers talking to each other about what's possible. So this issue is still not resolved. And people in the Council of Bayside could receive letters to notify that they need to take their signs down or else face a fine. However, in Glen Iris City Council, there's no such thing like there is in all the other councils. So you can see it's quite weird what's going on. But what it's doing is it's raising the profile of Zoe Daniel, and it's also raising the hypocrisy of the current member in terms of freedom of speech and all the things he advocates for whilst trying to squash our freedom of speech. I hope that makes sense to your listeners. It's been a bit convoluted, and I'm still trying to keep my feet on the ground as we navigate this Fencegate saga.
Well, one of the interesting things about not just your candidate, your electorate, but the independent voices of movement, which I suppose grew out of Kath McGowan in the seat of Indi. She probably put a blueprint together that many picked up on. But initially you were branded as being connected to another side of politics, but this probably highlights the true independence of Zoe Daniels and others like her in this situation, because you are clearly standing separate, alone, and fighting a lone battle.
Well, the thing about it is that it's a different model than most people are used to from the two-party preferred, you know, system. But we've always had independents. They meant to just not be en masse like they're sort of looking like now. And even before, you know, Cathy McGowan, we've had Andrew Wilkie down in Tasmania, and there's been other people like Ted Mack, who was up in Sydney for many years. There's been a history of independence coming through in federal politics in the House of Representatives. But what's happening is that this independence movement, particularly what we call a community-backed independent, which is different from a single-issue independent, community-backed independents work for their community, for their electorate. And so what you'll hear sometimes is saying, oh, who are you going to side with when you actually get into government? And we say, well, into the House of Reps. And they don't side with anyone. They look at each issue, each policy, each bit of legislation, and they look at it, and they also then they reflect on how will this affect my electorate and how will it affect the nation. They take both things into consideration. And what happens with independents is that they actually force the two political, you know, the two main parties to actually do what we would normally do in real life, and that is sit down and work it out and negotiate and discuss and collaborate and compromise and find the best solution for all concerned, not a one-sided solution. This is what the main parties want. They want one-sided solutions, but that's not good for our democracy. So what, you know, what happens with good community-backed independence is that they actually make the government in power work on good policy and legislation, so we get good laws passed for the broader Australian democracy and community.
Sue, what's important is the old saying about slinging mud does stick. Now, earlier you were branded as a stooge or a puppet for one side of politics. Zoe's got up and clearly stated that at the last two elections she's voted for the Liberal Party in 2016.
I'll correct you. She voted for Malcolm Turnbull in 2016.
Yep.
Because of his climate policy.
Not the Liberal Party as such. That was the clarity.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
Yes, the clarity. But then in 2019, because of what happened, and there was no climate policy or good governance around that, she changed her vote. She will tell you she's a classic swinging voter.
Yep.
She is someone who is trying... She's a sensible centre candidate. She's trying to look for the best solutions that are sensible and reasonable, and that will help people get, you know, good legislation and policy for the country and for the electorate.
So because she is a swinging voter, either side would be happy to try and brand her as a stooge for the other to take away the independence. Do you think you've killed off that myth yet, and do you think the residents of Goldstein are well aware of the fact that Zoe Daniel is a true independent?
The people that know of her do know that, but one of the biggest issues with any election, but particularly this election, not just in Goldstein but across the electorates, 151 electorates in the country, is voter disengagement. That is the biggest competitor actually to good politics. So we've got a lot of people who are disengaged for whatever reason, but most people are just overwhelmed, they're sick of it. When we talk to people, and that's the whole point about, you know, our campaign, it's on the ground, human to human, talking to people. So what we've got to do is engage people and have conversations with them. And when we do have that conversation and they become aware of Zoe in our case, they go, oh, actually there is an alternative, there is a better way of doing this. We go, yes. And that's what we have to do, because people have just kind of shut off, they're sick of it, they've had enough, but it doesn't mean that they don't care, because people are angry. They're really cross at what's happening at the moment and the lack of stewardship and leadership that's happening in the current federal government. They're really cross. So when you're able to have a conversation with them, that's when you can really talk about alternatives and good alternatives. So our biggest job here in Goldstein is to talk to the disengaged voters, and that's our job. We've got to get out there and get on the ground, boots on the ground, having lots of conversations with people, and that's how we'll start to raise awareness and then hopefully create positive change.
One of the major policy issues regarding, taken on by the independents is gender equality. You were heavily involved in the original March for Justice 12 months ago in Canberra that really did capture the imagination of the nation at that point. But we're 12 months on, a lot of debate, a lot of discussion. It, in some quarters, been pushed to the back of the subconscious now with other issues coming forward, particularly the events in Europe at the moment. But March for Justice did raise again last week. How do you think the issue is holding up over the 12 months?
Yes, well, when I look at it all, and we actually ran our own little grassroots event, March for Justice this year went local. They encourage people to run their own local events. And so we followed up with that. So we held one in Goldstein in Caulfield South, and Zoe and I basically spoke. So I spoke on behalf of, you know, the March for Justice sort of movement from our perspective, and also to Zoe then spoke about it from our gender equality, you know, initiative that she's standing for as one of her four pillars. And essentially what I reminded everyone of is that March for Justice was this amazing moment in time that sort of sprung off the back of, when Brittany Higgins, when the information and story about her horrible situation in Parliament House Canberra broke on the 15th of February, and then off the back of Grace Tame, you know, winning Australian of the Year, kind of all of that coalesced together. And when, Janine Hendry on the 28th of February 2021 said how many people it takes us around Parliament House Canberra to express our disgust at what's happening in Parliament House, you know, the answer came back 4,000. And that was when the genesis of March for Justice was ignited. And then, you know, we managed to get, tens and hundreds of thousands of people, you know, around this. So essentially, March for Justice last year kind of brought a whole lot of people together, and something did shift last year. But from a parliamentary perspective, a government perspective, they've done very little. However, many people from the communities across Australia lit a fuse that day, and they, as I said, created a moment in history that's now actually unstoppable. We're actually seeing, you know, from building on the groundbreaking work of the suffragettes, including our electorate's namesake, Vida Goldstein, you know, to the women's movement of the 60s and 70s, and then to the modern trailblazers of the likes of Grace Tame and Brittany Higgins and everyone in between, what we're seeing is our collective voices are now being heard, and they won't be silenced. And so we have to keep working on this, and we have to keep pressuring people to help create positive change, because we don't want more inaction on gender equality or platitudes or broken promises. You know, we don't want more divisiveness, threats and gaslighting, and we certainly don't want more violence and death. But what we really want is to enforce gender equality now. We passed the legislation, first ever in the world, the Sex Discrimination Act of 1984. Australia passed that. But we've got legislation there. We need to enforce it. We need to make respect normal. We need to help people transform social attitudes so that every person can be safe in their homes, their communities and their workplaces. You know, we need to help amplify voices of women in Australia. So what we need to do is really advocate for systemic change. So, a lot of people want things to change overnight. It doesn't happen. But what I've learned from March for Justice and being part of this independence movement and being campaign manager for Zoe Daniel is that people power does work. It creates change. Nothing beats organised money like organised people. And I am so buoyed and enthusiastic by the beautiful, wonderful people that I'm meeting. For example, on Sunday when we held our little grassroots event, we had about 120 people turn up, and we just did this little grassroots event thing. During the week, one of the emails that came through from this lovely man who wanted to meet Zoe, and I encouraged him to come to one of our street meets. He said, he was in Sandringham that Saturday. He goes, look, I can't. I live in Caulfield South and I'm disabled. I'm in an electric wheelchair. And I said, I'm terribly sorry, but I don't know if you can, if it's close by, but if you want, you can come and meet Zoe on Sunday when we run our March for Justice event. And he turned up in his wheelchair, you know, at Caulfield South. And we had a chat and he talked to Zoe and it was just beautiful. Like, there are so many good people who don't have a big voice themselves, but when they come together, we have a big voice and we can make change. And as I said, I'm meeting the most wonderful, caring, beautiful people. And whilst the world's going to hell in a handbasket at the moment with Kiev and, you know, Ukraine and, you know, the Russian invasion and the floods up in Lismore and around, you know, northern Australia and things like that, we can't forget that the vast majority of us are decent humans who do give a damn, who do care. They just need to know how to do it together so we can do really great work and create better societies. So I'm very buoyed by all of this. Bloody hard work, can't say.
Yeah.
But I'm really buoyed by all of this because we can create change. I hope this makes sense for your listeners and yourself.
The important thing for you, though, in amongst all the things you just said, is keeping your four pillars at the forefront of voters' minds, and I would think both the major parties would not be wanting to spend a lot of time talking about any of those four pillars. They'll be distracted in other areas. There has been a fair bit of attention focusing on discrediting both Brittany Higgins and Grace Tame, and sadly on the weekend I've seen the success of that. How do you keep people focused on the issues that you want to talk about when there's so much happening to muddy waters and get them distracted?
Yeah. Well, this is the standard operating procedure of the current government. They want to practice what I would call in business confusion marketing. They want to make it so hard for people to get a handle on anything to make an informed decision that we all end up confused and bemused. However, what we've got to do is keep coming back to what's important for people, and that's why on-the-ground human-to-human conversations, listening to people, hearing what's important for them, and then providing them with something that they can relate to and connect with and hang on to, so that they feel like they can actually create change rather than feeling helpless. The big parties, particularly the current government, want us to feel helpless. They like that. But we're not going to be helpless. We can create change. Democracy is for the people and by the people. It's our duty to actually do something. So with messaging, what's important is not to overcomplicate it, but to keep consistent and persistent and help people see that more of the same means more of the same. Do we want that? This election is too important to actually keep doing more of the same. We want to be able to show people that they have agency wherever they are. Their vote counts and they can make positive change. But I always advise everyone to look at the details, ask specific questions. Don't just listen to the slogans and the platitudes, because behind that there will either be substance or it'll just be slogans and platitudes, and they don't want to change. They just want us all to kind of just be numb and just stay quiet. Well, we're not going to be quiet. And that's why I'm fighting for justice. That's why I'm fighting for, you know, what I'm doing with Zoe and the team. And because I'm not going to put up with this rubbish. I'm sick of it. We're all sick of it. And we want change now.
You've got another job. It's the job that pays the bills for you, helping businesses, working with businesses to improve their status. What's the feedback coming from them? We're coming out of a pandemic situation. I guess there's a bit of confusion, businesses trying to find their feet again, wanting to be normal, wanting to keep the same number of staff or in fact increase. Are they upbeat yet?
Well, look, Ukraine-Russia saga hasn't helped, and the floods, of course, haven't helped, because, you know, you think you've got your sea legs and then all of a sudden, bang. But what I do think is happening is that people realise that the practices of actually running a good business and valuing staff and working with people, valuing your customers, which is what I've always stood for, you know, human-centred, ethical business and sales practices, you know, looking after customers, looking after your staff. There's a lot of businesses that realise, if they haven't already been practising this, that this is critical. I want good staff. If I have... And the other thing you mentioned about, you know, Brittany Higgins and Grace Tame being dished upon again, we all know that if you treat people badly, if there's corruption around, if you diminish women, that business suffers, the economy suffers. Corruption, gender inequality and abuse are all bad for business and our economy. So the way to solve our business woes is to run, diverse, you know, ethical, good businesses that value and honour their people and their customers and their suppliers, and they work well together. It's also to root out corruption, because corruption sends us down the slippery pole of, and we lose money. So corruption's bad for business. Inequality's bad for business. You know, all of these things, lack of climate action is definitely bad for business. So when you come back to it all and you look at it, whether it's on my campaign trail or in my business, getting these things right actually is very good for our future prosperity and our business, and we are rich, all richer, literally, for it.
Both parties will probably not want to have the climate change debate at the forefront, because I don't think either of them, by standards of the true climate scientists, believe that they're doing enough. But interestingly, a very, very damning report came out of the United Nations Climate Council or Panel on Climate Change, and also the events that you've talked about in Queensland and New South Wales that many educated people are pointing the finger squarely at climate change. With these two things still fresh in people's minds, are you, from your point of view, pushing for an independent with climate change as one of the four pillars? Huge asset to you and a real difficulty for the two majors?
Well, this is the thing. You just have a look at what, you know, Mike Cannon-Brookes with the AGL, you know, takeover scenario. If government isn't going to do something, which they damn well should be, then big business and people like Mike Cannon-Brookes have got money to actually create change. Honestly, I can tell you the business community here in Goldstein and across the business communities that I work with in my professional, my business hat on, is that they realise and they know that we must transition to a renewable energy economy, okay? We must use our talents and capabilities, or else Australia and Australian businesses are going to miss out. We're going to lose out. So there's the FOMO thing, fear of missing out. There's also FOLO, fear of losing out. If we don't create positive change here and actually get on that renewable economy bandwagon, Australia is going to become a backwater. And there are plenty of business people out there who don't want that to happen for all the obvious reasons. So it's something that's incredibly important, that if we're going to be, take politics out of it, if we want to be a sustainable, viable, healthy economy and a rich economy and have our standards of living, we must transition to this, or else we're going to go down the backwaters.
Another issue that has popped up, certainly the Russian situation, but also the continuing connection or attempted connection of China to the Australian Labor Party as a negative. I suppose that's coming up in conversation as you go around Goldstein. Have you and the party team tactically, if you like, thought through this and how Zoe Daniel would deal with anyone trying to connect her to the bads of Russia and China?
Look, I can't speak specifically here, but all I know, we've got, you know, different ways to approach things, but I do know that Zoe is standing for the Ukraine, you know, like all of us, pretty much all of us. But also, too, from a China perspective, we have quite, not a large, but we do have a Chinese diaspora in this electorate, and they're very important to the electorate. I read an article, so I'm not speaking on behalf of Zoe, I'm just speaking on an article that I read over the weekend that showed that the Chinese diaspora here in Australia are very disappointed with the negative rhetoric towards China, and that's causing them quite a degree of grief and consternation. So, you know, punching down on different communities, you know, whether it's the 18C, you know, a thing for the Jewish community here in our electorate, because they're very upset about trying to, you know, get rid of that or change that, or the Chinese rhetoric, punching down on the Chinese community, they're very upset about that. None of this is statesmanlike or dignified. It's just politicking, but you know voters on the ground don't like this kind of stuff. So to be a diplomat and to manage that, I'm obviously far be it from me to tell anyone how to do that, because it's not my area of expertise. But if I'm listening to voices on the ground, I can tell you that people are very unhappy with the rhetoric coming from the current federal government about these areas. But I'll leave Zoe to talk more about that specifically if people want to follow her on Twitter. But I'm just giving you what I'm picking up and what I'm hearing on the ground from people.
we might try and get her, because she's very worldly in that she spent a lot of time in other countries and would have a much better handle on on diplomatic relations. It'd be interesting to see how she would handle it if it came back at her as an attack. Sue Barrett, just on, you touched on voters being disengaged, and I firmly agree. I'm finding more and more people that I socialise with have a simple comment: they're all the same, they're all crooks, it doesn't matter who you vote for. That's a bit of a concern. But as you're moving around, are you finding that your campaign is re-engaging people?
Yep, absolutely, because they didn't have a choice before. And also too, in our electorate, like some of the other electorates that have got independent standing, we were basically taken for granted. It was just it was thought a lay down mazare, that it would, you know, still remain a blue ribbon seat and so on. So, you know, our current incumbent basically hasn't been out talking to us, hasn't been engaging, doesn't listen. And so this time though, things are different. So when we do talk to people and we show them that there is a viable choice, because remember, there'll be some people in the electorate who couldn't, from an identity perspective, vote for the other side, okay? But they could still save face and actually vote for a really legitimate, sensible centre independent candidate. And that's what we're seeing. We have people from all stripes supporting Zoe.
It's
pragmatic.
Just on that score, will the campaign produce a how-to-vote card, or are you leaving it up to the constituents to individually decide how they preference?
Okay, so all of us should be aware that that is our duty as individuals, that we can choose who we put first, second, third, fourth, and so on, okay? So from an independent candidate perspective, obviously we want people to put Zoe number one in Goldstein, okay? But we won't be telling them exactly who to put second, third, fourth, whatever. Again, that's up to them. So people do ask this question all the time, and they do want some guidance and advice, and we try to help them understand what's important. And we say to them, too, if for whatever reason you can't put Zoe first, please put her second.
Yep.
So again, you know, people often think, oh, the party tells me how to vote. No. All of us individually, we have the power, and it's our duty to put what numbers we want where.
You've got clever mathematicians in your team, no doubt. First preference votes will Zoe Daniel need to get to be in the game for the distribution of preferences?
Okay, we want to get her voting number one around 29,000-30,000 number one first preference votes.
So what's that a percentage of? Just about 30%?
About electorate of 110,000, yeah, so just under 30%.
Yeah, okay. And that makes it a lot easier than starting from zero to get to something like 40 or 45 would be a big ask, but 30% is not out of the realms at all.
Mm. Yeah, because we've got this, you know, the preferencing system and things like that as well. So I'm learning lots. Rob, I was never a political, you know, person in the sense of, you know, I mean, you're right, we've got some absolute brainiacs in terms of the number crunching and the preferencing and all of that kind of stuff, and I just sit back in awe of these people. They're incredible, and I'm learning heaps and heaps from this. But I think actually the Australian public would find it fascinating. I think we should learn more about not the ugly politics that we see, these, you know, horrible fights and things like that, because they're not fighting for us, they're just fighting for power. But I think if all of us actually learned a little bit more, not a lot, but a little bit more, about how politics actually works when we vote, people might be a bit more discerning and going, oh, actually, this does count. I might pay a bit more attention next time. Anyway, I am,
geez,
that's for sure.
Geez, maybe we could do something really clever, like perhaps put it in a school curriculum.
Well, yeah, I know, exactly. So, but look, we take one battle at a time there, Rob, okay?
Good point. Last question, I've asked you before, are you still having fun?
Yes, I am. When I meet these people in the field and I talk to them and they're so enthusiastic, and, you know, when I meet these, you know, these blokes on the weekend who wanted fence signs, and, you know, and I give it to them and they give me a fist pump going, keep it going, Sue, and all that kind of stuff, I'm really, it's hard work. There's a lot of moving parts for sure, and sometimes I get a bit tired and I have to confess being a bit teary just because it's so overwhelming sometimes. But I meet people, and the more people I meet, the more they want this to happen. And I'm just, it's a real honour and a privilege to be the campaign director and to lead this on behalf of Zoe and everyone, and to be there to help everyone move forward. I'm having fun in a way that's making history in 2022. So this is a moment in history I won't miss. Whatever happens, I will have done my level best, as is all the amazing people we're working with who are absolutely working their guts out to make change for this country.
Thank you for coming on at short notice. Angela Pippos was going to be on. She's heavily involved in the campaign as well, former ABC journalist and crazy mad footy person from Adelaide. She'll come back on in a couple of weeks, she did promise. But Sue, thank you again for your time. Good luck with the projects, and we'll check in probably midway through the campaign and see how your sense of humour's holding up.
Oh, no worries. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it, Rob. And have a great day, everyone. Take care. See you soon.
Thank you very much, Sue Barrett, talking about independence and hopefully killing off a few myths that have already come, and I'm sure there'll be plenty more, because I have a feeling that wave of independent candidates in this election will finish up playing a major role in how our political landscape might look beyond. So we need to talk about it, and you need to be more informed. As I keep saying, I don't care who you vote for, just make sure you know why you're doing it. This is 94.7 The Pulse. When we get back,